This is Morning Edition on Vermont Public Radio, and good morning, I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Well, tonight we will be following the returns from all across Vermont because, believe it or not, it is finally Election Day. Now, roughly 16 years ago, VPR's senior political reporter Bob Kinzel set off on a massive research journey to see if he could find a town in Vermont that always mirrored the statewide results. So not only did a town have to pick the winner, the margin of victory in the town had to be pretty close to the statewide outcome. In his search for one town, Bob actually found five communities that he is calling the mirror towns. And for the last 75 years, these towns have been very accurate barometers of the races for governor and lieutenant governor. So let's talk more about this theory of mirror towns with Bob Kinzel. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Mitch.
Take us back to the beginning of this, because it's kind of fascinating. How did all this get started?
Well, Mitch, I have to confess, first of all, I love to look at election data, how different candidates did in different towns in different years. So while I'm looking at the results of the 2002 general election in Vermont, this thought crosses my mind. Yeah, I wonder if there's a town somewhere in the state that reflected or mirrored the statewide results on a regular basis. You know, I don't know why I thought there would be a town in Vermont that reflected the statewide totals, but I was determined if it was there, I was going to find it. And I was also certainly open to the possibility that there wasn't a town that mirrored the statewide results every year.
Tell us about that process. How did you do this?
Well, I went through the state elections book for 2002 to start with. Now, that has the results of every statewide race listed town by town. And I wanted to see how many towns supported Jim Douglas, that was his first race for governor, and Brian Doobie in his first race for lieutenant governor. That was a year where Douglas won a close race against Democrat Doug Racine, and Doobie defeated Democratic candidate for Lieutenant Governor Peter Shumlin and progressive candidate Anthony Polina. So after combing through all these results, I had about 35 towns that fit the bill. And I thought, whoa, I'm off to a great start. But then I started going backwards. So I did the same thing for 2000 and 1998 and 1996. How did these 35 towns do as we looked at more and more elections and they started to drop out? I went back to 1960, and of those original 35 towns, there were five towns left standing. And they are Bethel, Bristol, Cambridge, Jericho, and Randolph. And ever since then, I have followed these towns in every election since 2002, and they have an amazing track record.
How amazing? I mean, have these towns ever been wrong?
The only times they've been wrong is what I call the exception policy to the mirror town concept. If a statewide candidate comes from one of these towns, or if they live in a neighboring town, then we don't count that town that year. I'll give you two examples. In 2008, Jericho Representative Gay Symington was the Democratic candidate for governor. And not surprisingly, she did much better with Jericho voters than she did on a statewide basis. And in 2014, Republican gubernatorial candidate Scott Milne had a very strong family base in Orange County, so I didn't use Bethel or Randolph in the governor's race that year. But that's really the exception, what we think of as the geographical factor.
Or the home field advantage, as I like to call it. I want to bring someone else into the discussion now, Bob, because joining us to discuss this mirror town concept is somebody who was intrigued by this theory and decided to make it his major thesis when he was a political science major last year at Castleton University. So joining us on the line now is Tyler Ballard, who is now enrolled in political science, the PhD program at Brown University. So, Tyler, this mirror town concept, it sounds like a pretty wonky idea. I'm wondering what got you interested in this subject.
I was really enthralled with election forecasting models, and I had posited that idea to Professor Rich Clark, and he's like, well, it's a good idea. It's just there's a lot of components that go into it that really make it difficult. And as social scientists, this is his favorite quote, we're really good at predicting the past. And so he had brought up Bob's mirror town findings. And I sort of ran with that just because I wanted to see if I could posit a theory to explain if there are any decisive factors that would contribute to these towns being able to mirror the statewide gubernatorial election outcomes.
Hey, Tyler, it's Bob here. So how did you go about researching this concept? What were some of the factors that you were going to look at?
Well, there were a lot. I ended up doing some regression analyses. There was age, there was partisan identification. Partisan identification, obviously, in Vermont is very tough in a state where you don't have to register for party. So there's some operationalization issues that come with that. There was race, there was median household income. There were a plethora of variables. While it's useful to have all these sort of controls, you hit a certain point where they don't really add anything to the model. So partisanship ended up being a real huge factor for, I would say, most of the time. My theory going into it was that the towns that perform best in gubernatorial outcomes would also match or mirror the state on a demographic basis in terms of educational attainment. They would have similar median household income. They would have a similar, you know, median age. My theory was just that they would not just perform the same as the state on electoral outcomes, that they would look like the state too. And that didn't necessarily hold up. So there's nothing conclusive to really explain why these municipalities perform as well as they do. They just do.
Did you come to the conclusion that, yes, this five-town mirror town concept does, in fact, work? You just weren't exactly sure why.
Well, it works until it doesn't. It was essentially that was the conclusion I drew.
But to this point, it has held up.
Yes.
Well, Tyler Ballard, thank you so much for sharing your ideas with us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You bet. So, Bob, back to you. This research seems to suggest that there is no predictive value with these towns, that just because something has been true in the past, it doesn't mean it will be true in the future. What do you think?
You know, I'm reminded what Yogi Berra said, that predicting is really difficult, especially in the future. I think Tyler, though, really did hit on some stuff that is very important, and that would be the income levels, the education level of people, sort of the demographic profile of these communities. My guess would be if we spent some time really searching and comparing the demographic levels, as he did in 10 or 12 cases, with those of the state of Vermont, we're going to see some overlapping demographics. But again, there's nothing conclusive there, and it really is a situation, I think, as he summed it up best, it works until it doesn't.
Bob Kinzel, thank you so much for speaking with us.
My pleasure, Mitch.